Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lau.
Hey, so I got Marvel Digital Online. Actually, wait a minute. What did I get?
Oh, that's so staying in.
Marvel Digital Comics Unlimited.
Ah, okay. You want to do that again?
Nah, it's all right.
Ah.
That's staying in, too. What have you read so far?
Planet Hulk, which was great. World War Hulk, which wasn't. And cool. I'm now in reading Annihilation.
Which is?
That's the...
No,
space.
I meant like good or not so far.
Well, I just started, so...
Oh, okay.
So I've only got six issues into it.
Oh, out of how many? Because six issues sounds like you'd be done. Jeez.
Well, I'm reading all the additional series. I haven't actually started the Annihilation series. I just read the prologue.
Wow. That's actually kind of why I got out of comics, but anyway.
Well, I mean, the cool thing here is that they're not cluttering up my house.
So how does that work? Like, do you... You can view them as many times as you want online, but you can't download them? Is that how it works?
Yeah, there's something about having a library and you can have like six of them and somehow you can store that. But I haven't done that yet. I just view them online.
And is it all like a dedicated program that you can only use on your computer, or could you like download it onto your phone or something like that?
Apparently you can look at them on your smartphone or your tablet. And they have maybe special apps, but I don't know. I really wouldn't want to read a comic book on my phone. It's just too small.
Yeah. Tablet would be kind of cool.
Yeah, I suppose.
It's about comic book size.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. So for like a monthly fee or a yearly fee, you get unlimited access to, I think they have like 13,000 comics on there.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Wonder how many shoe boxes that equates to.
How do you put comics in a shoebox?
All right, you know, one of those comic book boxes.
Right, that's an awful big shoe if you've ever seen those boxes.
All right. All right.
How big do you think comic books are? I think you've been in Japan too long.
How big do you think shoes are? You've been in Japan too long.
All right, moving on.
Oh, Wayne and I went to a game day for the Osaka Jig.
And you got a bunch of games of X-Wing in, didn't you?
I got two in. So
how'd the rematch go?
Not so good. I screwed up on my movement on the second turn, so I lost. And then we did team play, and then we won. So that was that. But got to try out the TIE Interceptors for the first time and see the Millennium Falcon in action. So the Millennium Falcon is a beast.
That's what you were saying, yeah.
Yeah. Interceptors, not... Yeah, I don't know. I'm still really liking the regular TIEs as far as like value for points. I didn't try the slave one. It was all right. And then Wayne and I tried a game called Cash and Grab. Was that what's...
No, Cash and Guns. Cash and Guns.
Cash and Guns.
And yeah, we played with the expansion Cash, Guns, and Yakuza.
Yes. And that's a game where every person has a gun, or if you're Yakuza, then you have a little sword.
And a shuriken.
And shurikens. And...
How stereotypical.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't see the illustrations for the cards either.
That really captured the Yakuza there. And it's kind of like you use the gun to point at who you want to shoot at. And yeah, and then you divide the money. The premise is you've just finished a job, a heist. And now you have to divide the money between you. But of course, you're not going to divide it equally.
Yeah, it was a bluffing game. You have a stack of like eight cards that say are either like blanks or bullets. And during the turn, everybody says like 1, 2, 3, and then you point the gun at someone after playing a card. And then you have a chance to back down. And then people who are still in flip the card. And, you know, if it's a click, well, then nothing happens. If you played a bang, then the person you are pointing at takes a wound. And each player can only take 3 wounds, and then they're out. So, like I said, it's kind of like a bluffing game, because everybody knows how many clicks and bangs everyone has in their deck, and like you don't reshuffle the cards. So I don't know. I would play it again. I wasn't that impressed with the Yakuza expansion. Like, we had to use it to have six players, but I would just like to see the basic game without the swords, because they made things kind of weird. And, like, the shuriken, like, Yakuza had a shuriken card where if they played it, they got to chuck a foam shuriken at, like, your character stand-up, and if they hit it, you took a wound. So, I don't know. I'm not a fan of mixing manual dexterity mechanics into a game like that, unless everything is manual dexterity. You know, it felt kind of weird. But.
Yeah, I didn't care for the game. It's one of those games that I suppose could be a lot of fun, and you can almost think it's like a drinking game, or sorry, I should say a game that you would play when you're drinking. But I don't know.
It sounds like a quick party game.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
I think there's better games out there, like Resistance, for that type of style of game. This, where you can actually enjoy the game mechanics and the real premise of the game.
Right.
This was, I don't think you really enjoy the game so much. You just maybe enjoy pointing stuff at people. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. It's one of those games that it's like, hey, this is funny. It's a funny game. So you're therefore you're going to have fun. And I'm not a big fan of those games. Cause,
with quotation marks around funny and fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't hear Lyle's air quotes?
They came across loud and clear, actually.
Yeah. And we also played The Avengers.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed with that game, despite kind of muddling through the rules. Because by that time of the convention, like, things weren't winding down. But, you know, there was a break, and we just said, okay, what do you want to play? Well, let's play this Adventurers game, even though no one in the group has played it before.
It had a boulder that... It looked like you could roll, so then that's why.
So then Lyle tried rolling the boulder, and he's like, yeah.
Turns out you could.
Knocked over somebody's drink. Yeah. Chaos. Yeah.
No, it's the Indiana Jones game. It's like like the opening part of Indiana Jones, except there's like lava.
It's a dungeon crawl, essentially, is what it is. But
well, you don't really crawl, though. You kind
of
run.
Yeah, because of the boulder. Yeah.
Swim.
Yeah. So there were some pretty interesting mechanics in that game, I thought, like, you know, determining whether the boulder moves and, you know, stuff.
There's
with
the walls that close in.
Oh, the walls that close in that never actually closed in, you know.
Well, it's just because of the way the deck was shuffled.
Yeah, and also we were using the wrong side for the cards. We're like, these are all blanks! Like, oh, because they're on the other side. Right. But, I don't know, I think it's one of those games where after you play it once and you figure out how to play, then it becomes a lot more fun. So I'm not saying, like, I didn't have fun the first time I played, but it was kind of, you know, a bit tempered by trying to figure out how everything worked. So, yeah, I would play it again. I don't know if I would buy it. Because even though the components looked good, I imagine it kind of being a somewhat expensive game because of that.
Hmm.
Maybe around like the $50 to $60 mark.
Oh, speaking of $50 to $60 mark games, I bought Fortress America, the reissue from Fantasy Flight.
So I'll have to come over and play it.
Yeah, cool. No, you should. That was a game I played way back when it was a Game Master Series game. It's where three different, not nations, but coalitions attack the United States.
And America always wins.
It is very difficult to beat America.
So the rule book is just one line long. America wins.
Yeah. Oh, I should say it was written by Americans.
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh, and one more quick thing. Just a quick shout out to Devin, my old GM from back in the day. He's got a baby coming in August, so congratulations, Devin. Good job.
And I think our final news before we move on to the episode proper is there is a listener survey.
You want me to do that? Because I put one in.
Yeah, sure. I guess I screwed that up. Yeah, go ahead, Wayne.
Well, good job. But you want me to do that?
Sorry. That's not what I meant. Sorry, it's a 2013 RPG podcast listener survey.
And we have a link on the right hand side of our website. Did I do good, Wayne?
Yes. You all done, you know, good, Lyle.
You just want to sit this one out, Lyle. We'll take care of it here.
y'all made me mighty proud.
You done yourself good.
Yeah.
So tell us about that listener survey, Wayne.
All right, now you want me to jump in. All right.
Well, I thought you were going to do more than just read the title.
So if you haven't done some already, please take the time to fill out that survey. It only takes about 5 minutes tops. There's only about like 10 or 12 questions. And the data that we gather from it, or the data that gets shared among all the podcasts is pretty useful. So yeah, we appreciate you filling that out.
So now for the episode, and the topic this week actually comes from one of our listeners who goes by the name Mead, or at least goes by the name Mead in his communications with us. And he provided a link and suggested that we look into a thing called the Sin Eaters. So we looked into it and thought, hey, that's great. So we'll do it.
I think we actually exchanged 52 emails on the topic. We all got really excited about it. So thanks, Mead.
So we decided to make it a creature feature. So for people who are unfamiliar with the creature feature format, what we'll do is we'll talk about Sin Eaters, both fact and fiction. And then we're going to get into a discussion on how to use them as antagonists and how to use them as protagonists.
Yep. So basically, the Sin Eater is an old mythology. There's different similar versions of it around the world, but the one we're primarily looking at, the ones called Sin Eaters, comes from the British Isles, specifically England and Wales, but they were also in Scotland, and there was some Celtic tradition from Ireland as well. But it's the basic idea is a person who eats some food and or drink over the body of a dead person to take on the sins of that person, so that the dead person can move on to heaven or whatever afterlife, and then the Sin Eater moves on to hell when they die.
I think it even came over to certain parts of America.
That's what I was reading. Yeah, it's spread into Appalachia, but I only found reference that it spread to Appalachia. I couldn't actually find any details about it beyond that.
Yeah, like when we started looking into this and when I read the article that, you know, Mead provided, like my first thought was, you know, the way we set up creature features, we talk about it, you know, first in kind of like the reality or myth, and not a lot is known about Sin Eaters, and
yeah,
maybe that's just because of, you know, the nature of their trade and just stuff not being written down. Mm-hmm. But it may also be because, as you said, Chris, you know, by consuming this food and drink, usually beer and bread that's passed over the corpse, yeah, the Sin Eater takes on the sin of the dead person, and that's kind of a big burden for them to take on, and because of that, they're not exactly welcome people in society.
Yeah. You know?
Most of them were either like hermits or, you know, people who lived on like the edge of town or were like completely destitute people because this is the only job they could do. And occasionally when they would perform the ceremony, they'd get like, you know, a couple shillings, which would amount to like a couple of dollars by today's standard.
I think it was a sixpence.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I read as well.
Well, how about this? It wasn't a lot for what they got. It was barely anything. And
there's actually a case of a well-to-do farmer who acted as a Sin Eater.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah. Yeah. Not to disagree straight away, but yeah, I'm not sure that it's not that it wasn't well documented. Maybe it's just, I think, you know, when you first look at it, it's maybe not super interesting. I mean, they're eating bread and drinking ale over a corpse.
Right.
It's also uncomfortable if you actually believe in the concept of a Sin Eater. You actually think that they are taking on the sins.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that therefore that they're going to become more evil.
Right.
Yeah.
Or be corrupted by these sins. So perhaps people didn't want to talk about them so much. But, I mean, there's still, you know, information out there on what they are. And it survived quite late until, what, the 19th century or early 20th century?
Yeah, 1906 was the last one that was recorded in England, but who knows if it continued beyond that, especially in the Americas.
Hmm.
Before we go any further, we should add a little bit of a disclaimer here. We are discussing a tradition that was part of the Christian faith. So we will be talking about Christianity, and especially later in the episode when we're talking about how to use it in your game, that could be perceived as being somewhat insensitive towards the Christian faith. So if you are sensitive,
why are you listening to our podcast?
Or you don't want to hear people imagine what could be done and perhaps presenting Christianity in a way that
you don't agree with?
Agree with or kind of taking liberties with it, then perhaps this is not the episode for you. But if you know, if you're fine with people just speculating on older traditions and just kind of running with the ideas. And yeah, by all means, keep listening.
Yeah, I think this is the first time we're going to discuss like modern or current religion.
Yeah, because you keep shooting my Pantheon Pandemonians idea that down.
Oh, sorry.
So actually, speaking of religion, there's some parts of this kind of sin-eating tradition that goes way, way back. I think you were the first to talk about it, Wayne, that it goes all the way back to the ancient Hebrew traditions of Yom Kippur, where like an entire village would take all the sins of the village and they would transfer it onto a donkey, who was then let off into the desert to go and die along with the sins of the people.
It was a goat.
A goat, I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, well...
That's right, yeah, scapegoat. Yep. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, it's not called scape donkey. Come on.
Though I would like to use that from now on.
That'd be pretty funny. But, yeah, like, I don't know, sin eating is not weird, but it seems like several traditions grew out of sin eating, as well as, you know, sin eating was influenced by a bunch of traditions. As you mentioned, Chris, sort of Yom Kippur, where the sins are kind of transferred to an item or an animal and then released or killed sometimes, as you said.
Yep, that's what I said.
Yep, exactly, which is why I said, as you said, smart guy.
There are other traditions that are quite similar, such as like in Germany there, where they eat, I think, a cake.
Like a corpse cake.
Yeah, the cakes were all over the place. Yeah, the ones...
all over the body.
all over Europe, these funeral cakes were apparently pretty big. Like you were saying, in Germany, they have these funeral cakes, but there's not a position like a professional sin eater, if you want to use the word professional. But rather, the nearest relative of the person who died will eat the cake. Then that kind of just passes on in the family. But I guess they're saying in the Netherlands, they used to make these little cakes that had the initials of the person. They'd actually had these full companies that specialized in making these little funeral cakes.
Hmm.
And apparently some of the mortuaries in New York in the United States for a long time into the early 1900s, they continued making these cakes with people's initials on them for funerals.
It just kind of goes to show how pervasive something is, even if you don't sort of adopt the whole practice. Yeah. You know, kind of the way over here in Japan that like Christmas is celebrated, just not really as a religious holiday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and speaking of Japan, I'm thinking of like this corpse laid out as one of those, you know, fancy sushi tables, except with little corpse cakes on it.
Oh, like when they get those naked girls.
Yeah, yeah.
And they put the like sushi on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I'd rather do that one than disturbing. Like the naked corpse with cake on it. Yeah.
Well, I guess if my choice is eating bread off a corpse or sushi off a girl, yeah, I guess I'd take the sushi.
But, you know, but I
probably wouldn't want to eat food off of anybody.
Yeah.
That never really been one of my fetishes. Yeah.
I'm sure they wash the body first.
Yeah, you know, the corpse wasn't the fetish I was talking about. I was talking about the food. Sorry.
Necrophilia, I'm fine with that.
Girls, ew. Yeah.
Oh. They got cooties. Well, yeah, he died of cooties. Didn't you know that? Does cooties survive in a dead body?
Cooties eaters.
Yeah. Now, despite this being quite pervasive and there are different variations, the variations aren't that dramatically different from each other. I guess that there would be the two, not extremes, but the two classic examples, one the scapegoat,
right,
the literal scapegoat, and the other the eating food off a corpse or near a corpse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, sometimes like the food or drink was just passed over the corpse. Sometimes it was actually like placed on the corpse, as we've said. Or right. Like sometimes you had to use like a special wooden bowl, which was that, or a tray to serve the food and drink, which sometimes was burned afterwards.
Right.
So, as you said, yeah, there's like little variations, but not a lot of variation in these traditions.
And despite this, though, there's a lot you can do with it and a lot that people have already done with it. Marvel Comics had a series of characters called the Sin Eater who were vigilantes who felt, you know, they needed to kill criminals in order to kind of save people, I guess, purge their souls. There's kind of that idea that kind of the redemption or almost like being a martyr, like taking it upon yourself.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like corrupting yourself in order to save society.
Yeah, because as you said, like the idea of for the Sin Eaters of taking on a sin was they somehow became more, what's the word I'm looking for? More twisted, more corrupt, more tainted by taking on this sin. So that is usually why the Sin Eater was seen as such a, I guess, an unwelcome person. Because, mm-hmm. like, no one would want to associate with this person, because think of, you know, how much sin this person is now carrying inside them, and that's bound to affect them somehow. So, yeah, there is a sense of being a martyr in there, in being a sin eater, or maybe desperation, too.
Yeah. I wonder, it seems kind of like a chicken and the egg kind of question. You know, did these people who were these destitute beggars, did they start sin eating as a way to survive, or did they become destitute beggars because they were sin eaters and outcast from society? I wonder which started first, but I suppose it's something would be interesting to explore as a character.
Yeah, I think it could probably be both, you know?
Very true. Yeah. One of the things that surprised me was the church's reaction to the sin eaters as well. Now, you're talking about how society treated them, but even the church often excommunicated them or, you know, kicked them out of the parish as well. I guess some of the reasons behind it were that they had excessive sin and that it was an unholy thing. Only like Jesus or the Lord can redeem your sin. It can't be passed on to another person like that. But
Well, the Catholic faith has the system where you seek redemption through the priest.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like you confess your sins.
Yes.
Now, and actually this is something that we did forget to mention, is why would you be motivated to have a sin eater? And a lot of times it was for people who died unexpectedly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have a chance to have that absolution, you know, the last rites, mm-hmm. where they speak and confess their sins to the priest. Mm-hmm. So in that case, it kind of gives it a little bit of nobility in that.
Right.
There is that desperation, and despite the risk of excommunication and despite the stigma attached to it, is that communities would embrace it because they are just they care so much for their family and friends. Mm-hmm. And that gives a sense of nobility to the sin eater, even though there was, you know, the exchange of the sixpence, which even in those days wasn't a lot of money, considering the baggage that came with that money, is that that person was doing a pretty important service to the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were essentially saving someone else's soul.
Absolutely, and you really can't divorce that strong belief from the practice. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we'll be touching on that a little bit later when we talk about the antagonist and the protagonist. So there is that, but in one respect, it's the system that the church has created that creates the sin eater,
right?
Mm-hmm. Because they can't have that those last rites, and on the other hand, they're taking away, in a sense, from the church's system, because they're giving that the priest's duties to someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you saying that. From what I read, in several religions, you know, or several versions of Christianity, yeah, as you said, it's impossible for a regular person to transfer sins, or, you know, absolve someone or take on someone else's sin. So, yeah, I could see the church being upset with sin eaters, possibly, you know, even saying they're charlatans, you know, and that the people they're supposedly saving, you know, they're not actually saved. They are kind of damned because the person who took away their sins, well, kind of wasn't authorized to do that. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. I don't know about the Protestant denominations, though. My understanding about the Protestant denominations, they would be more individual with the congregation. The minister has, they seem to have a lot of power, but I guess, I don't know, the absolution comes from within more in Protestant faith. So,
well, maybe this is jumping ahead a little
sin
bit.
Sin eating seems to fit the Protestant faith more, or philosophy more than it does the Catholic philosophy or the Orthodox philosophy.
Well, like, even though sin eaters were usually used for, you know, people who died unexpectedly or without being able to confess their sins, like, I heard that they were even used for people who died peacefully or were able to confess their sins, just because it kind of became a tradition of preventing the body or the spirit from kind of wandering around after death.
Yeah, that was the other thing I read, is that it stopped ghosts.
Yeah, it kind of became a little bit of you know, not a little bit, but it kind of became, again, so pervasive that even people who kind of weren't damned to go to hell had sin eaters for them, just kind of to make sure.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember the name. There was some minor lord, or sorry, I believe a woman, a lordess, something. Lady, yeah, thank you, brain. But she wrote into her will that that a sin eater was to come and take care of her. So it really was very, that's what I'm looking for, put into the system.
Institutionalized.
Thank you very much, Wayne's brain. And I suppose that kind of the preventing spirits and ghosts thing, that's the only tenuous link I could find to the World of Darkness Geist book.
Well, that and the name.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we first started doing research with this, I'm like, oh, I should check out that Geist Sin Eaters. All right. And hey, nothing to do with real sin eating at all, except the name.
It looks like a fun game, but there's not really any connection there.
You know, my homebrew Space Marine chapter is called the Sin Eaters.
Right. And they carried around little wafers to pass over the dead orcs they killed?
Yeah, they don't win many battles with their little bread. We'll eat over the corpses of our fallen brothers.
Can't you wait until after the battle's done? Nope, gotta do it right away.
Yeah, no, the idea is they are the loyalist brothers of the World Eaters chapter, or Legion.
So the link is eating.
Yeah, World Eater, Sin Eater.
Yeah.
Oh, we lost again. That's so
the only obese Space Marine chapter.
No, there's the Death Guard. Obese, bloated, same difference. Yeah.
Okay, the only obese Space Marine chapter that's not infested with Nurgle rot. How that?
Obviously, you guys aren't too interested in hearing the rest of this, so we'll move on.
There was more.
Oh, no, I'm enthralled.
There was more. Did the Dreadnoughts have to carry big cakes?
What? Chris, are you drunk?
That was the most delayed laugh ever.
That's great.
Big cakes. What is that?
For the Dreadnoughts.
Sorry, I just imagined this gigantic robot carrying an enormous birthday cake. It made me laugh hilariously.
All right.
Thanks for that aside.
Yeah, sure.
In our discussions prior to the episode on how to play them, we kind of kept going back and forth. And debating, you know, how that's really going to affect the Sin Eater. So we're actually going to mix up the antagonist-protagonist. We're not going to do one and then the other.
Yeah, you know, when I was looking at this, specifically for kind of a protagonist bent on it, if I were playing a Sin Eater, it was actually really hard to come up with something because it seems like a really, really dark kind of character no matter which way you look at it.
Right.
And the reason that is because, you know, helping someone with their sin or with their problems, that's fine because, you know, you kind of solve it or there's some kind of redemption for it. But with the Sin Eater, nobody is redeemed. You know, the person who committed the sin is still there. They're not asking for forgiveness, maybe in a will or something like that, but they're not doing anything to make up for it. And the Sin Eater, it's not like they're cleansing the sin, they're taking it into themselves. So someone still has to pay for it. It's just all around pretty dark.
Well, I might disagree that no one is redeemed because, like, the dead person has their sin taken away. So right. Even though it's not by their own choosing, I would kind of say they are redeemed. Because otherwise, like, if both people go to hell, you know, if the dead person goes to hell because they didn't properly absolve their sins, and, oh, hey, the Sin Eater goes to hell because he took on someone else's sin, well, then who wants to play that game?
Yeah, you know, well,
that's a pretty crappy world you've set up there.
I agree. So it was kind of hard to think of roles a protagonist for a Sin Eater.
I think necessarily people want to play the Sin Eater as after they die.
Well, yeah, I know. But no, that's a good point you bring up, Chris. And I think if you set up the world where, you know, taking on someone else's sin, eating someone else's sin, is a noble act, as Lyle said, because there is kind of like a sense of nobility to helping someone else avoid damnation, then you could play it where, yeah, after the Sin Eater's death, they will be rewarded with, you know, a happy afterlife. You know, they will go to heaven, even though their time on earth is pretty crappy. Mm-hmm. And that is a way to play a noble Sin Eater, that even though you're going to have, you know, a pretty crappy existence and be sort of mistreated and be shunned, there is a reason for you to do it, or there is some kind of ultimate reward for you to be rewarded with, you know?
Yeah.
Which requires a big cosmology shift. You kind of have to set it up before you start playing the game.
Well, not necessarily, because it's one of those things where you don't have to be clear about what happens after you die. You just set it up similar to the real world. Nobody knows. So you can play a senator that believes that that will be the case.
True, and I know you were going to say something, Lyle, but then that gets into the whole thing of like...
but you don't get a chance.
Yeah, you don't get a chance. It goes the whole thing of...
I'm going to let you finish, but...
yeah, I'm going to let you finish, but first, then you get into like faith, and if the player wants to play a Sin Eater, you know, not knowing whether or not they're going to be, you know, rewarded or punished for doing this, then that's fine, but I think faith is really difficult to represent in a game, but... Anyway, sorry, go ahead, Lyle.
I don't know. I mean, whether you have to decide whether you're going to play like a mundane or spiritual supernatural game. Mm-hmm. I think you do have to kind of establish what the sins mean in your world and what happens to them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets into whether, I mean, is there the potential of corruption or taint by taking them on? I mean, are sins a real thing? Like establishing that. If they're not, then it doesn't really matter.
Right.
If they are a real thing, are they taking it on? I mean, then is virtue a real thing? And is what they're doing virtuous in that it kind of counteracts taking on the sin, each right. action?
Mm-hmm.
No.
What happens to the corpse? I don't think that's so important, whether right. or not you're splitting the sin, actually taking it away. I think it's important what happens, though, to the sin eater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And certainly... how society views the sin eater. Do they view this as a real thing? And therefore, you know, maybe they think that that person is noble, or they think that person's tainted, or do they not think it's a real thing? Then they, therefore they think the person's kind of crazy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there are a few things that you do need to establish about the world in order to have a sin eater. If you don't, and a person just decides to do it, then I think you're going to play a character along the lines of what, like, Marvel did, and they are some sort of vigilante or vigilante eater. I don't know.
vigilante eater.
I believe we call it a cannibal for the same species.
Vicious Batman.
They've kind of taken it upon themselves. And sure, I mean, if you want to do, like, really antagonistic or very gray, almost black protagonist, yeah, then you could do the cannibalistic thing where they think, yeah, no, I'm not going to eat bread. I'm going to eat a part of the body, and that'll consume. You know, it's heart. That's what the sin is. It's in their heart. So if I eat the heart, then I eat their sin.
Yeah. That's kind of like, you could go that way, or you could kind of go the more, you know, sacrificial goat kind of way where the sin, the person doesn't really have to eat anything. It's more of, as you said, kind of, Lyle, like, they would just have to like kill someone or find a way to remove the sin, but not actually eat it. The sin would be more of like a metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, actually talking about that, you know, I mentioned before that the dark part of it comes from there not being anyone who's redeemed from it. But, you know, that you could actually work that in as part of the sin eater's job. He may eat the sin off of someone else, but he's left with that sin on his own, so he has to atone for it in some way. That might be a way that you could work that into a sin eater as your character.
Yeah, I guess so. And not to split hairs, but I'm kind of curious what you mean about some people not being redeemed.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I think what I mean by redemption is that somehow the person who has the sin, be it the sin eater or the original sinner, they do something to make up for the sin and that the sin is forgiven. Whereas in the case of a real sin eater, it's really just transferred. You know, the person who sinned originally, they may get away with, get into heaven or whatever despite having sinned. But it's not like the sin was ever redeemed. It's still there.
Okay, fair enough. I see what you mean.
Sorry,
like,
that's what I meant by
that. It's not atoned for, but someone is getting off free. Like, they're not getting punished for it.
Exactly.
Because I was a bit confused at the beginning, because I'm like, well, if nobody gets away, then what's the point of sin eating?
Yeah, that's what I meant, is that nobody's clearing the sin. It's just somebody's getting away without, despite having caused the sin.
Okay. Yeah.
Back to what Wayne was saying just about, the scapegoat approach to the sin eater, that opens up some possibilities in that maybe a different type of sin requires a different type of scapegoat or a different type of action to get into what you're saying, Chris, with the redemption.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right, so that kind of game can... I'm thinking solo game right now, but...
Right.
I suppose you could work it within the group that I mean, let's imagine you go into a town. I'm kind of thinking like a Supernatural, and there's some sort of sin. And you know, in Supernatural, they're always, oh, we've got this kind of ghost, and to defeat this kind of creature, you got to do X.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the story is about doing X, either finding out what X is and then doing X. So that's the same with the Sin Eater, is finding out how to redeem that particular sin and then doing it.
That's pretty cool. I like
that. Yeah.
Well, actually, going off of that, like what you said, a group, that'd be kind of cool if you had the whole group comprised of Sin Eaters. So like if somebody, I'm thinking like a group of D&D adventurers, as one party member falls, the rest of them eat over his body to take on his sin. Whoever's the last one is the one who has to take on the whole sins of the party of murder hobos.
That would be a lot of sin. That would be a lot of sin.
I really like that idea. I wonder how it would work in a game in that. Just talking about the adventurers, that board game we played. I died quite early in that board game, and it is quite lethal.
Mm-hmm. That's the
point.
And
they do have a way of responding and coming back into the game, but it's actually a big flaw in the game. It's not worth coming back in.
Mm-hmm.
I stuck around just to watch the game play out, just so I could see what happens in it. But
and complain a little bit too.
I did not complain. I thought I was a champion, an absolute sport.
Martyr, you're a regular martyr. You're a regular martyr. Sin eater for everyone in that game.
Yeah, I just ate it all, you know. Just put some bread over the board. Yeah. Sorry, what was it talking about?
I have no idea.
Sorry, the solo game and respawning.
Oh, no, Chris's idea. No, I think that's really cool, like a video game or like a movie, a book, you know, following that is like one, because no one's playing those characters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So as they drop off, like, I think that, you know, I think it's an amazing idea, Chris. I guess I would have to think a little bit about how that would play out with the characters. I guess if you had a group of players who are pretty cool about coming into a game as new characters,
mm-hmm. right.
then they're still participating, and they still have this idea of like one person carries the sins.
Yeah.
And what that does, I don't know if do they get a lot of disadvantages and advantages? Do they get extra powers? It's almost like multi-classing, you know?
Yeah. Unless you go into what the afterlife holds, you know, it's hard to actually make that matter in a campaign. It's hard for it to hold any weight beyond just kind of, you know, story fluff, but still.
No, not necessarily. Yeah. I think that's a great idea because, I mean, you know, we talk about multi-classing, and I mean, we're all big fans of the 3.5 Pathfinder style of multi-classing within the D&D rule set. And just how do you gain those powers? How does, like, somebody who's fifth level whatever suddenly gain a level of wizard or sorcerer, you know? But this sin-eating is a way to do that, you know? They eat that and they gain this, but you got to kind of make some sort of disadvantage. Maybe they're haunted.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That I think you just hit on what I was going to say, Lyle. Remember there was that 3.5 Ghost Walk supplement where you could actually play ghosts. And even though it kind of, you know, goes against, you know, Christian tradition, like if the Sin Eater ate the sins of the people who died in the party, and then the party members could somehow come back as ghosts and, you know, tag along with and still kind of be equal partners with the still living members, that's a way to do it and still have everyone play.
That's cool.
The other way to do it is to have, as Lyle said, have people come in as new characters that aren't sin eaters. And I'm not really sure how you would work that or if it would even be interesting for the people who were playing like regular characters, but that's another way to do it. Where I was thinking, like, back to kind of the Supernatural thing, maybe this is a little bit like World of Darkness, where, okay, if you're kind of going the metaphorical route, where you don't actually have to eat the sin, but instead the group kind of, you know, rolls into town, tries to figure out what sin is affecting the town or the location or the person, well, there's going to be different kinds of sins. So you could have a group of sin eaters who all specialize in different sins.
The murder eater.
Well, I was thinking more like, you know, seven deadly sins. And, you know, it might be hard to run because the GM and the group would have to come up with, you know, different ways of dealing with the sin. And, you know, kind of, there might be a lot of overlap between character abilities and whatever. but that is another way to do it. You know, having people focus on a specific aspect of sin.
I'm catching what you're saying. I like it. I like it. You could, talking about what you said, Lyle, with about kind of absorbing powers through the sin, I mean, that would make a great antagonist. Somebody who's going around and ostensibly helping people by eating their sins, but gaining some kind of dark power from it.
No, I mean, yeah, no, I think that would be a great antagonist. And that ties into other traditions, you know, where you eat the heart of
right.
the fallen foe and you gain that person's courage
mm-hmm.
and do that. Yeah, no, you could see, wasn't that something in the TV series Heroes? Didn't he have some sort of ability like that? Isn't his name Skylar?
Yeah, he ate people's brains and absorbed their power.
Yeah. So there you go. You could, in a sense, say he was a type of sin eater. No?
No, I was just thinking. I was just thinking. Yeah, if having a power is a sin, then yeah, you sure it was.
Another idea that we thought when we were discussing this is the idea of, you know, they're eating the bread, but really they're there to eat the sin. And there could be something actually quite tasty about that sin. I think Chris coined the sin reveler. And the idea is that, you know, people think, oh, that's horrible. Why are you doing this? Why are you eating the sin? But they experience the sin, you know, so they know what it's like to murder somebody, or they know what it's like to, you know, experience extreme lust or whatever, to use the seven deadly sins.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're eating, oh, sloth. Oh, that was it. That was it.
I feel so full afterwards. I just can't move.
No, so lazy. Oh.
No, but like, totally. I think that's my favorite idea of all the ones that you presented. And, oh, it's just such a dark, evil, twisted kind of villain. Somebody who's taking these sins away from people to really enjoy it. And oh, man. Evil. I like it.
Well, it kind of reminded me a little bit of like far future stuff where you can record sensations and emotions and experiences and then, like, you know, replay them in someone else's brain.
Oh, yeah. Strange Days.
Yeah, yeah. Movie, eh? Thinking about that. That's a great movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That could be, yeah. And it could be the sin buyer.
Yeah, like a whole sin trade kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how the sin eater gets the sin out, though.
Do they need to?
I guess not. They could, like, hey, here's an idea. If sort of sin eating is something you can teach, well, then I'm sure there would be a huge black market for corpses with certain experiences, which then get bid on for people to eat the sins of that person.
Oh, like the Tokyo fish market.
Yeah, except instead of giant maguro, it's bodies.
Oh, the first evil man of the year. The bidding will be high on this person.
Well, then spin that out even more, and why wait for the person to die?
Oh, I like the just, black market that would shape in this.
Yeah, just like tracks. Yeah. Track. I could say, okay, you could have like a sin eater shop where someone goes and says, yeah, I want this kind of sin. Track it down for me. And yeah, you don't have to wait for the person to die. Just go out, haul the person in. Ooh, here's it. What's the shelf life of a sin? Does it have to be consumed within a certain period of time? Or could you just, like, you know, kill the person and drag him, you know, back somewhere that'll take a week to ship?
You told me this was murder. This tasted like manslaughter. pass the duty. I like the auction idea. I think that would be a fun thing to play.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I'd want to watch.
If by fun you mean ghoulish?
I'm not sure if I want to play it where you just go into a shop like, oh, I'll take that Vorpal sword. Oh, and that corpse over there. The corpse of a murderer.
Like a morgue. You just kind of slide it out of the wall, put a piece of bread on the chest.
Yeah, I'll take the corpse of an adulterer, please.
Yeah, it would be much more exciting to, you know, kind of go and have an auction, you know, kind of like a big show, I'm imagining, you know?
Mm-hmm.
A very big show. Yeah.
How'd that work with vampires, do you reckon? Because, you know, their souls are damned, and they're already dead. If you ate dinner with a vampire, could you absorb their sin?
Well, no, I was thinking, like, you spin this out. Yeah, you spin this out to, like, supernatural or fantasy elements, and I kind of thought that, well, a vampire is already dead, right?
Yeah.
They don't have an afterlife anymore. They don't really have a soul. So could a vampire become a sin eater? And if so, they are immortal. So that could be a very noble thing to do. You know, mm-hmm. you're never going to die. You're never going to face judgment. So why not help other people by cleansing their, you know, their sin? So
well, that's a good way you could run the sin eaters too. Make the sins that they eat somehow kind of supernaturally preserve their life, So that's kind of the deal. It's a terrible thing. It's a horrible affliction. They take these sins themselves and it affects them. It damns them in a sense, but, they are able to continue going on and, eating sin forever.
Hmm. I was thinking, like, it's been a while since I read it, but this would be a good place to use, like the taint and corruption rules from the D&D 3.5 Book of Vile Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I never really understood why you would want to play an evil character and, you know, take that taint or corruption. But in the context of Sin Eaters, it makes a lot of sense because, I don't know, you're doing something that's possibly good, but you're being corrupted by it. You know, that's kind of the price you have to pay. So I think that would be a pretty appropriate mechanic for a Sin Eater game if you were doing it in D&D or D20.
Yeah, so many ideas. Man, if I were going to run a Sin Eater campaign, I'd totally play it in Appalachia. I just imagine, like, the Deliverance kind of setting, you know, everybody's got that southern drawl, it's always hot and sticky around, it's just, it seems like it's perfect for an evil setting.
You know, there's a movie about Sin Eaters in Appalachia.
Is there?
Yeah, I think it's called Sin Eater.
That would make sense.
Why the heck did I not run across this in my Google searches? Oh, is that the Heath Ledger one? I saw some mention of that.
No, that's the one also called The Order.
Okay.
The Last Sin Eater.
Okay.
It stars Henry Thomas, Louise Fletcher, and it's in 1850s Appalachia.
Huh. So it's already been done.
Settled by Welsh Americans.
All right, then. I have my setting.
There you go.
Yeah, you might want to watch that movie first. See how playable this game would be.
Chris comes back next week. Oh, yeah, no, never mind.
Yeah, this will be boring.
I'm going to eat your sin.
Oh, it was a movie. It was a book originally.
Hmm.
Okay.
No. If I were going to do sin eating, I would definitely do...
Murderers. Sorry.
Yeah, murderers, yeah. Supernatural type of setting. I would probably do modern.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think fantasy, I think a lot of the elements that make it exciting would get lost.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
But certainly you could do sort of like a higher powered Sin Eater or almost like a superhero-esque version of a Sin Eater in a fantasy setting where it becomes a way of like using your magic or something. I mean, you eat the sins and that fuels your magic, and murder sins fuel these type of spells, and gluttony sins fuel these types. Sloth sins just make you sleepy.
Right.
Hey, sleep, sleep.
Hey, yeah, that's how you cast sleep spells. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, when I get around to it.
Abraca. Whatever.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty funny. No, I agree. I'd probably run it in modern setting too, with not a lot of other supernatural stuff, because as you said, Lyle, like putting in a lot of other kinds of magic and like supernatural powers and abilities, well, the sin eating would get kind of lost and not be as special as it could be, you know?
I think a sin eater character would be, when we talk about playing it in a group, would be pretty exciting if you're dealing in like a mixed party where you have different types of specialists, like you have the world class detective.
Mm-hmm.
So they're bringing that to the party. I think there's some comic books that deal with these type of mixed groups. You know, we're talking about low powered, a mix of supernatural and mundane. So the Sin Eaters like really would stand out.
Right.
Oh, yeah. No, I was going to say, you mentioned superpowers. You know, a great superpower, kind of mixing in with the detective investigation theme, is if a sin eater, you know, as sin is their food, they had some kind of supernatural senses that linked into that. You know, they could smell someone who was a murderer or something like that. You know, walk into a room, you kind of get a whiff of what sin was committed there.
Yeah, I had a superhero plan. I made a superhero, and one of his abilities was heightened sense of smell.
Mm-hmm.
I just regular, not smelling murder, but but oh, I guess gunpowder residue.
Yeah.
But in certain parts of the United States, I don't think they would be able to pick out the murderer.
Yeah.
And be like,
well,
whoa.
That kind of gets into what I was thinking too. Like in certain parts of the United States, people would walk into like the dead room and like, man, there's a lot of sin going on here. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean he's our guy. You know?
I smell incest. Yeah. Who set
that
this game in
really
Appalachia?
Cool.
Or imagine like.
You walk into a brothel and kind of like the guy just, whoa!
Yeah, I was thinking like walking to like and set foot anywhere in Las Vegas. You're like, holy crap, I'm nose deaf. Oh, God.
Yeah.
We mentioned kind of fantasy and modern. Also, if anybody's looking to do this in a more futuristic sense, the system Fading Suns might be really good for it. It's a pretty dark system to start with, but it also has a kind of a similar to a taint kind of system. It's called Hubris System, where your sins can begin to take over your body.
It's also a fairly religious system.
Yes, very. Yeah. It's based off of the Christian faith as well.
I think that's kind of one of the key, maybe not giant key elements, but I think that kind of has to be in place in the setting as well for Sin Eating to make sense, you know?
What's that?
Well, religion, because kind of, you know, without the idea of religion, you don't really have concept of a sin. I mean, you could get into, like, you know, universal evils, but yeah, I think that's why, like, a modern setting would work because it has religion, and that's why, like, a fantasy setting would work because, you know, again, you have kind of the, you know, the gods and religion, so you have the concept of a sin. But yeah, like in a really, or that could be a really interesting take on like a future or modern setting. Imagine like a world of, or a universe of like atheists or, you know, some setting where no one believes in religion except this small group of sin eaters. And man, what a giant job they have because people don't believe in religion anymore. That doesn't mean they're not still sinning. And there's this small group of people who have taken it on themselves to make sure they can save as many people as they can, whether those people want to be saved or not.
This sounds like a game where you're just going from funeral home to funeral home.
Well, yeah. Probably. Like, I don't know how to spice it up, but again, it's probably what more would be more interesting as a movie or a book rather than a game. Could be like, okay, yeah, what funeral home do we go to today?
So. Yeah, yours would be like the art house independent movie.
Yeah, yes. As usual.
You know, driving from there and, you know, he falls in love with the quirky girl.
Who's also a sin eater, yeah.
Yeah. So, Chris, I think suggestion of Fading Suns is pretty good. I was thinking Trinity. There isn't really a religious aspect so much in Trinity, but... for those people that don't know, it was Weisswolf's SF game.
Right.
And it followed Aberrant, which was Weisswolf's superhero game. And it is like, they're not superheroes, they're like psychics or psionics. And I don't know, Sin Eating could fit into that style of game, not necessarily Trinity, but that kind of style where you do have these specially powered people or individuals in the future, and they're tasked to do certain things, and one of them could be a sin eater.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you could kind of take it a little bit further and say, you know, like certain types of psychic manifestations are sins. You know, that's kind of how they manifest, and so you have to cleanse them.
Imagine the movie Alien with a sin eater, and they somehow can, like, get the essence. I mean, if you're a sin eater, you must be able to... Well, okay. No, not you must be able to. If you play a sin eater a certain way, when they eat, they taste the sin, so they know that there's sin there.
Right.
We could do it further, like we suggested before, the Sin Reveler, where they eat and they can actually enjoy the sins. But regardless, but with an alien, if they find an alien species and they want to find out both them, they get the person to kind of sin eat over the, not necessarily the corpse. And they can get an idea of the person's aura or essence.
Ah, right, right. I thought you meant like actual like xenomorph Ridley Scott alien, and I'm kind of like, how is that going to work?
Yeah, and when it bursts out of the person's chest, they don't care anymore.
Yeah, that's what, eat it. That's what I was thinking. I'm like,
let's find out if it's evil.
Or I actually kind of thought you meant like, okay, let's eat over this chest burster corpse, and yep, okay, he's dead. And how did he die? Yeah, chest burster. All right.
Yeah, I don't think it's like a forensic scientist. He's dead. Oh, we forgot to mention the idea that we're kicking around about the Sin Skinner or the Virtue Skinner. And this came out of a little debate we had about whether or not someone could eat virtues.
Right.
In order for them to appear more virtuous, perhaps when they die, you know, going through the gates of heaven. And there was a bit of a back and forth of whether or not the math made sense.
It did. As a person who suggested it, I got shut down. It didn't.
But we skipped ahead to the idea of taking the Sin Eater in a different way. And what they do is they don't necessarily eat the sins. They more like skin the skin. They skin the skin. Gosh.
Skin the sins off of the people?
They skin the sins off of the people or skin the virtues off of the people. And it becomes sort of this virtue or sin cloak. Like a disguise.
Hmm.
So if you play a game like World of Darkness or, I guess, more specifically Vampire, where you have like aura perception.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there are individuals that can perceive your aura supernaturally. This is a way to counteract that, is you take someone else's aura.
Mm-hmm.
So you steal the auras from a corpse. You know, imagine like a baby dies. You know, we do know about identity theft. I mean, it's the classic Cold War is where they take the identities of kids that passed away, and then they make those passports. And you know, you have a corpse. You take that that little baby's aura, and you appear quite pure.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. I mean, that's a dead baby thing, but like, because
dead baby's not cool.
But like in any sort of setting, like. Even in like modern setting, like, yeah, people know about identity theft and, you know, people are generally kind of safe on their computer, I tend to think, but like not everybody knows how to do it. So I'm sure like a sin skinner or a virtue skinner could get away with, you know, cloaking themselves in someone else's aura from most of the general population. You know, they'd probably fool them, except for those really well-trained people. So I think that's a pretty cool idea.
You know, actually, take it even a step further, where it's not just their aura; it's their actual skin. I mean, not their physical skin, but their looks. I think that'd be really cool. You take the sin off of somebody, and you can take on their appearance. Of course, the downside to this is that, you know, you've taken the appearance of someone who has done something bad. They've sinned in some way. So you can change what you look like, but you're always going to look like a murderer or an adulterer or something like that.
Yeah, or the other downside is the person's ugly.
What was their sin? They got hit by the ugly stick. Oh, come on.
All right, so take someone whose sin is lust. There you go.
Now, I was thinking more like not so much that the person takes on the appearance of the person that they skinned, but more, yeah, whatever flavor of sin or virtue they skin off the person affects who they are. So yeah, let's say you did, you know, skin the sin off a murderer for some reason. Well, now you kind of have
crazy eyes.
Well, not necessarily. I wasn't thinking anything outward appearance. I was thinking more like, you know, internal personality, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know how you'd represent that in a game, but
maybe
some way to mess around with like the morality system in World of Darkness.
Well, they certainly have the morality system and the humanity system certainly lend themselves to skin eating style games. Even if you're playing like the Vampire, and that your humanity can improve,
right,
as you take on these sins, you know, through virtuous ways or dining on virtue. You know, maybe that's something you're stealing people's virtue or whatever, but you're a vampire, you don't care, but your humanity goes down. All right, well, that wraps up our episode on Sin Eaters, which I think was a pretty decent topic. So thank you, Mead.
Yeah,
thank you very much. Ton of ideas.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or stream it through Stitcher or iTunes, or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can sign up for our Facebook group there and send us messages that way, or follow us on Twitter, or post comments on the website, or just send us an email like Mead and tell us questions, answers, things, opinions, all that stuff that I'm not saying very well. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.